The anonymous landlord is more than just making profit from property. It's a system of automation and a strategy which will shape the way you invest in property forever. It's a quality of life, it's a way of life, it's a business mindset. The anonymous landlord will make loads of money from property and continue to grow wealth and assets without giving up time or energy or life. Because what's the point in making a load of money from property if you've got no time or energy to enjoy it? My name's Tom Sohn, and this is The Anonymous Landlord. Hi, everybody. It's Tom Sohn, and welcome to another episode of The Anonymous Landlord. And I'm saying that because this is no doubt going to go on my podcast as well, because I think it's really important information that everybody needs to know. And the general theme of today's presentation is everything you need to know about all of the actual costs and the fees and charges that are associated with buying an investment property. And this all came about because I see so many people calculate this stuff wrong, and they go and buy a property and then they think, oh no, I've got to pay for this and I forgot about that. And there's loads of charges, loads of fees, loads of additional costs. So I thought I would jump into action and help everybody out, because it's not just about the purchase price. And also, you don't need all the money at the same time. You don't need cash in your bank from day one. There's also loads of costs when you buy a property that you might not know about, but you can actually find out about. And there's also loads of costs you might not expect and that you can prepare for, and loads of costs that people just forget about when they're buying a property. So there's also true yield as well. You hear me talk about that quite a lot in my podcast. So many people get that wrong and they end up with a poor property investment or a poor return on investment because they just haven't calculated it right. And they haven't calculated their true yield or the true cost of their investment. And also, managing your cash flow is vital for any property investment. When do you need the cash? When do you not need the cash? And when are you going to get your cash back? So I'm going to talk through the upfront costs, the costs that you need on completion, the refurbishment costs and when you need the money. And then there's the ongoing costs. Once you own that property, what ongoing costs will you have? Then there's the exit cost. So if you're going to sell that property or rent that property out to a tenant, what are the costs involved in that? And then tax. Everybody forgets tax. Whether you're selling a property or renting a property out, there's probably going to be tax involved. And I see so many people calculate their investment and their return on investment and their yield and just forget about tax. It's crazy. I'll also talk you through some contingencies that you can make to make sure that you are prepared for any unknown costs or unexpected costs. I'll talk you through how to manage your cash flow, when you need the cash, when you don't need the cash, and how you can get it. And lastly, along the way, I'm going to give you a few tips and some advice on how you can optimize your costs and fees so that you don't get caught out. Now, remember, you don't need all the money. If you're buying a property, you don't need all the money at the same time. You just got to manage it so that you've got the money at the right time. The cash is there and available. So first of all, what costs are there up front? Now, we're talking about before completion here. I'm not talking about up front before you make any offers. Generally, before completion is classed as up front, right? So if you're buying through an estate agent, then the chances are there's nothing to pay up front. And buying through an estate agent is probably one of the least cash intensive routes to buying a property compared to any other route that you can buy a property through. Other, of course, if you go through directly to the vendor or the seller, then that's a cheaper route, obviously. But generally speaking, if you buy through an agent, there are no upfront costs. If you're buying through a sourcing agent or a property broker, then normally, I would say a decent property broker or a decent property sourcing agent would charge you something like 50% of their fee upfront as a sign of commitment. Because don't forget, it's their reputation that they're using to find you a property to make profit for. So don't begrudge any property sourcing agent or a property broker if they just need a bit of security from you and they ask you for a deposit on their fee. Because don't forget, you can pull out at any time, and that costs them a lot of money, it costs them a lot of time and a lot of reputation as well. So sometimes there are deal sources and property brokers that will charge you 100% of the deposit up front, or sometimes it's a fixed sum depending on you or depends on the deal itself. If you're unknown to the property sourcing agent or the broker, you might have to pay all of it up front. If you're buying at auction, there's auction fees. Of course there are. Has anyone bought at auction, by the way? Anyone who watches this, have you bought at an auction before? Be interested to find out. But there's modern auctions and traditional auctions. In a modern auction, you'll probably have to put down 5% as a fee and also 5% as a deposit. So you'll need that cash at the beginning of the sale process. A more traditional auction will probably be a bit less. You might have to pay about 500 quid, sometimes a bit more, sometimes a bit less. But you build all of those numbers into your offer. And remember, like I always say, nothing changes, nothing at all, except for your offer. That's the only thing that changes in these circumstances. Now, I go to loads of auctions, quite often for myself, sometimes for my property broker clients, or my mentor clients, and you've definitely got to know all of the fees for auctions up front, and sometimes they don't tell you. So make sure you know before you put your offer in how much the auction fee is going to be, how much the buying fee is going to be, and anything else associated with it. And by the way, if you need any help with finding the properties at auction, just give me a shout as always. The next thing you might need before completion is what's called money on account, which is your solicitor. So your solicitor will process the legal aspect of the purchase, and 9 times out of 10, they will ask you to put some money on account so that they can go ahead and order searches and put a deposit down on their fees again so that they know you're committed to the purchase. In this country, we don't have any kind of regulation around buying a property. You can just go around offering on properties with no commitment whatsoever. And if you decide to pull out, who cares? No problems. Not your problem. So sometimes there are people that do take a deposit on fees or take a fee up front just to make sure that you are committed to that purchase. And by the way, is anyone out there buying a property right now? Then do let me know. And also hit the like button, because what happens on my screen, I've said it before, when you guys hit like or the heart button or anything like that, it just flashes all over my screen. It looks awesome, really motivates me. Anyway, you might also need to pay an amount of money to your mortgage broker up front. Some mortgage brokers do charge a little deposit fee up front. Some people don't, but don't begrudge them a little bit of security. Because look, all they're doing is they're going to do a load of work for you. So if you decide to pull out, then they will have done all that work and lost themselves some money. So some mortgage brokers do ask for an amount of their fee up front. Don't begrudge them that security. My mortgage advisor, by the way, doesn't charge up front, but that's only because now he knows me. Now we do a lot of business together. So therefore, he knows that he doesn't need that commitment up front. And he's part of my investment team now as well. So, you know, there are some mortgage advisors that will charge up front, and that's okay. And by the way, if you need any help with mortgages, like I say, my mortgage advisor is a property investment specialist. He's a property investor himself. So if you need a mortgage advisor, I will happily connect you guys together. Just send me a message through Facebook or send me an email, tom@pinkstreet.co.uk. Anyway, here's a quick question. What would you say if an estate agent asked you as a buyer for a small deposit, let's say 500 quid, something like that? What would you say? You'd hit the roof, wouldn't you? Because it's just not the done thing. Even though they put a lot of time, a lot of work, a lot of effort into you, and you to buy that property for free so that you can have that property. And then if you decide not to buy that property, they lose out, they lose money, they lose reputation, they lose customers. But you don't mind, do you? Because you haven't spent any money for that estate agent. It's all been free. I think estate agents should charge small deposits. Anyway, then upfront costs as well. You might need to buy a survey. That could be anything up to about 750 quid. But that depends on the type of survey you're going to get done. You could have a home buyers, you could have a structural survey, you could have loads of different types of survey on a property. I'd always recommend getting a survey on a property. It might cost you 500 quid or whatever it might be, but at least then you know what issues there are, if any, with that property. It's it's 500 quid well spent, if you ask me. There's also lenders' legal fees. I know it sounds crazy. You're paying for someone else's legal fees, but that sometimes does happen where if you're buying a property with a mortgage and that mortgage lender has to take independent legal advice themselves, then sometimes that lender will ask you to pay for that. And you will need to pay for that on account in some cases. Indemnity insurance is another one. If you're buying a property and there are unanswered inquiries by your solicitor, or there are certain things about the property that you just don't know or don't want to know. Like for an example, I just bought a property in Newcastle and there needed to be a, it was an indemnity policy against some form of contamination. So I bought the indemnity policy, it was about 70 quid. And what it basically meant was there was an indemnity against that not being checked out by the previous seller. So indemnity insurance is not that expensive. It just protects you from the unknown, so to speak. And lastly, you could actually ask your law firm or your solicitor for a breakdown of all of those estimated costs. And you can see them in advance so you can plan ahead. Easy peasy. So those are all the costs you need to take into account ahead of completion. There are obviously more, but what I'm trying to do is get you thinking about what costs might be associated or what cash you might need before you actually complete on buying that property. So when you hit completion, there are obviously some more costs that are involved. Now, to start with, you'll need to put down your deposit. That goes without saying, doesn't it? It's 25% or more, depending on what type of property you're buying, what mortgage you're buying with. Or if you're buying it with cash, you'll need to put all of that money into your solicitor's client account to buy that property. But generally speaking, you'll need your 25% deposit on completion. You'll need also your stamp duty. Ugh. Now, for an investor at the moment, it's your normal stamp duty rate plus 3%, generally speaking. Now that might fluctuate depending on circumstances, depending on when you're watching this video, but you need your deposit, you need your stamp duty. You also need your legal fees. Now that can be anything up to a grand, but don't go cheap on the lawyer's fee. Promise me that, you won't go cheap on the lawyer's fee. And also go local. I can't stress that enough. I would also advise that you use the agent's lawyer that you're working towards, or just give me a shout. I'll link you up with the solicitor that I use for my purchases, or that my estate agent uses for their purchases, and they're my preferred solicitors as well. So they deal specially in investment properties as well, so hopefully they'll be able to help you out. But your legal fees might be a little bit more if you're buying a leasehold property. Put simply, it takes the solicitor a lot longer to read these big long leases. Some of them are hundreds and hundreds of pages long, so it takes them a bit longer, so they charge you for that. Also with leasehold properties, when they're reading the leases, then more questions come about that they have to ask the seller solicitors. That takes more time. What you're really doing is paying for the solicitor's time. Do you know what? I just actually saw an old lease this morning from 1919. It was like hundreds of pages on paper written in real old school English. It was brilliant. Anyway, so like I say, you can actually get a statement from the lawyer breaking all of this down before you complete on a property. Now, in some cases, the buying fees or auction fees or sourcing fees or property broker fees can be paid on completion. And by the way, if you're wondering what a property broker is compared to a property sourcing agent is, in my opinion, a property broker is a bit more of a premium level, more professional outfit that broker properties between either repossession agents, lawyers, accountants, sellers, motivated sellers, anything like that. They tend to broker the property rather than just go out and find it. A broker for me is someone who is well connected and well networked. That might be an individual, might be a company. Anyway, just thought I'd clear that up. So you've now completed that property. You've got all the costs there before completion, on completion. Now, bear in mind, at this stage, you only needed your 25% deposit, your fees, your tax and things like that. You didn't need all the refurb costs in those couple of months leading up to you completing that purchase. So now we're going to start the refurbishment, which, remember, you don't need all of the cash for the refurbishment on day one. So what I'm trying to say to you is that you can manage your cash flow, and you could That might even enable you to buy something a little bit sooner. Because if you've got a property you complete today, you're not to, right today, you don't need all of the cash for the purchase, the fees, the tax, everything like that, and the refurbishment costs. Because let me give you a hint on this as well. Do not pay the refurbishment contractor up front. Do not pay all of the money up front. And I'm sorry if there are any contractors listening to this or watching this, but let me just explain why. You can actually get a schedule of work from the contractor, get them to plan out what they're going to do in what order and when, just an estimated completion date. And then split all of that up into four payments. Get proof that each one of those four sections of work has been completed and then pay for the next section. Now, that does a number of things. It protects you as the purchaser and as the customer. But then it means that the contractor can buy the materials that they need to buy in order to complete the next section of work. So they won't then get the next amount of money until they've completed that section of work. It protects your money, minimizes your risk, and it's fair for everyone. The contractor gets what they need, the buyer gets the security they need. And I've heard too many stories about contractors taking a load of money up front and then just disappearing or shutting a company down so that a customer can't come after them for the money. In fact, one of my customers who has a property in Southsea bought it as an investment. And by the way, if you're watching this, hit the like button because it flashes up on my screen and you might even see the reflections in my face. Who knows? Let's test it out. Anyway, yeah, so one of my clients got a property in Southsea, bought it as an investment. And the contractor went round there, quoted 14 grand for a full refurbishment. It was just a two-bed flat. Oh, no, sorry, one-bed flat. Quoted 14 grand. And the customer just thought, okay, yeah, that's fine. I'll just pay that up front and let the contractor manage it. The contractor strung him along for a bit, saying, telling him all the time, yeah, we're going along nicely. Just getting this done, just getting that done, getting all these bits and pieces done. Strung him along for a couple of months and then just disappeared. So the owner is trying to find where this contractor's gone, can't find him anywhere, goes round to the property. All the contractor has done for £14,000 is cleared out the property. That's it. And so the customer lost all that money, couldn't find him at all, and that's that down the drain. Had to then pay someone else to get it done. Now, luckily, the second time round, I took over, managed the contractor's job for them, and allocated the funds accordingly. But it's a sad story, but it is the way life goes sometimes. Anyway, I'm talking about fees and charges, right? So make sure you do your due diligence on contractors. And by the way, if you want me to help you out with due diligence on a contractor, I can certainly tell you, just send me a message. I can tell you what to check for, what qualifications they need, what accreditations they need, and what to look out for when it comes to a contractor. Just message me. I'm happy to help. I just want to make sure people don't get this bit wrong. And just remember as well, by the way, a standard full refurbishment is going to take somewhere around 2 to 3 months, depending on the size of the property. So closer to 2 months if it's a smaller house, closer to three if it's a bigger one. So that enables you to map out your cash flow. So if you've got I know a property that you're buying today, you've made the offer today, you're going to have probably 2 months to get that offer completed, and then you're going to have a further 2 months for the job to be done. So now you can start to see where you need the cash and when you don't need the cash. A lot of people panic and think they need all the money up front. Well, you don't. And it might just enable you to save up a bit of extra money. If you get, you know, if you know you save £1,000 a month into your savings, then you now know that you can put an extra couple of grand into your savings whilst this whole process is happening. So once you've bought the property as well, yeah, you're doing the refurb and that's fine, but there are also ongoing costs. And this is now where we're starting to get into the nitty-gritty of what people forget and don't calculate into their yield or their return on investment. So the ongoing costs, first of all, you've got your mortgage or loan payments and interest. So if you've got a mortgage, inevitably you're going to pay mortgage payments, right? Fair enough. Now, let's say your refurbishment takes 3 months to finish. Let's just say that's three mortgage payments. Then you've got to get it on the market, and then you've got to get the resale completed. So you'll need to pay mortgage payments all the time that property is being done and ready for resale. Or if you're renting it out, you're still going to pay mortgage payments all that time until it's let and an income is being generated. So don't forget that. And there's also loan payments. If you took a bridging loan, then you're going to have that bridging loan for what? I don't know, what, a couple of months, 3 months, 4 months, whatever it may be, 6 months even. You're going to need to pay payments throughout that time. There's also council tax. Now, you can get a discount on council tax. If you've got a furnished property that's empty, I think you can get a 50% discount on that. If it's derelict or uninhabitable, you can get relief from that. If there's major refurbishment works that are required at the property and being done, you can get relief from that. But it is council to council. You actually need to ask your council what discount they would offer you. It's crazy. There's no set rule across the board. It's one council might say one thing and another council might say another thing. Fair enough. Okay, so anyway, call your council. Find out what relief you can have for the situation that you're in with your property. Then you've got utilities. Now, here's a quick tip. If you buy an empty property, or if you buy a property and it's empty for a while, then you need to put the heating on from time to time. Because if you don't, number one, it makes it a real unpleasant environment. Number two, it starts getting damp and musty smells and horrible stuff like that. And it makes it difficult to resell and relet. It takes a while to get that out. But number three, your boiler. You need to keep the boiler going, especially if it's cold. But also with utilities, you've got to account for your electricity and gas maybe. So if you've got contractors working at the property, then they're going to need to have access to utilities as well. They're going to use electricity and perhaps they'll put the heating on or something like that. But you'll also have to pay for your water bill and your sewage as well. That's just going to be regardless. You have to put that. You have to spend that money, I'm afraid. So all of those things, you have to take into account that when you own that property, you are then going to pay money continuously to keep that property going. Property does cost money. And then you've got your exit costs. Now, I know there's a lot of fees and a lot of charges coming along here, and hopefully it doesn't put you off buying property. But what we have to do as property investors, we have to make sure we know all of the costs and all of the fees and when they're going to be due and when I need the money, because it all counts towards an annual yield, right? If you save up all that money up front, that means you might have been able to buy the property a couple of months sooner because you don't need all that money up front. So if you could have bought that property a couple of months sooner and then completed on the real resale a couple of months sooner or let it out a couple of months sooner, then your yield goes up, your annual yield goes up. So remember that. You don't need all the cash up front. So now we're going to go for exit costs. And do you know what? I've just told you about a load of costs and fees that people always forget, like the tax, utilities, the mortgage payments, interest, anything like that. Arrangement fees. That's another one. If you're taking a mortgage or a bridging loan, arrangement fees. No one ever includes that. I don't know why. Anyway, so your exit costs. And what do I mean by exit? If you're going to sell a property or rent a property or let a property, sorry, that is your exit. So your exit from that property in order for it to become a return on investment, what is that? So before I get into that, I'm running a training event, by the way, which is everything you need to know for every tenancy, every time. And it's really for DIY landlords, self-managing landlords, and it takes you through every single step from advertising, viewings, referencing, vetting documents, all the processes, all the legislation you've got to follow, moving tenants in, everything you need to set the tenancy up, managing the property, managing the tenancy, more legislation, and being a legal landlord as well, rent reviews, property damage, chasing rent arrears, evictions, reletting, and also some advice on optimizing your profits and minimizing your risk too. The reason I say that is because if you are planning to buy this property, do it up and let it out, then this is the next stage. Especially if you're a DIY self-managing landlord, these are the things that you need to know now to stay compliant, to stay legal, and so on. So I'm running that training event. If you want to be part of that, let me know. I'm limiting it to 50 people this time because I did one a while ago and there was just so many people on it that there were just too many questions for one session. And we ended up, loads of people ended up having their questions missed So I will do more, but this time I'm just limiting it to 50 people so that I can see how the questions all go. Because it's just a ton. Everyone obviously has their own individual circumstances, and there were just so many questions that kind of meant I was discussing individual problems rather than helping everybody. I hope that makes sense. Anyway, right. So if you're reselling that property, then you'll need to plan ahead that your agent is going to charge you about 1% of the sale price, right? Of the completed sale price. Now, if you've done your due diligence and you've listened to all my podcasts and you've watched my videos on how to do property investment due diligence, then you'll know what the end value is. The GDV, gross development value, is going to be. That basically means what's the job done value of the property. So assuming you can get that property sold for the price that you pre-targeted, then your agent is probably going to say charge you 1% of that price, right? And that is also, by the way, everybody misses this, that's probably going to be plus VAT. As much as we don't like it, we all have to pay tax. And believe it or not, it's not the agent charging you VAT, it's the government. For some reason, I used to remember when I was doing, when I was in the day-to-day with a state agency, we would charge a customer, I don't know, 1% plus VAT, and they would say, oh, can you knock the VAT off? No, we can't knock the VAT off. That's not our money. It's just the government saying they're paying this much money, we're taking 20% on top of it. Fair enough. Anyway, so the agent will charge you about 1%. Some agents are more, some agents are less. Don't go cheap on estate agents. Please don't go cheap on estate agents. Doesn't matter whether you use my estate agent, Pink Street, or any other agent, don't go cheap. The better agents will get you more money in less time, and they'll manage more of the process. But most importantly, they'll get the sale completed. There are too many agents in the country that focus all of their efforts on the easy bit, getting an offer. That's the easy bit. You advertise a property, the buyer goes and sees it, they make an offer. That's the easy bit. Not enough agents put, well, actually, loads of good agents, but there are loads of really bad agents that focus too much on that and not enough on getting the actual job done, which is when you get your money. Remember that, Mr. and Mrs. Property Investor, you don't get your money until the completion happens. So you need to go with an agent that focuses on the completions as well as getting the place sold. Anyway, I've digressed, I know, shock. I know. Anyway, so by the way, give me a shout if you want my estate agent. Of course, I should probably plug my estate agent, right? So Pink Street is my estate agent. And if you want an estate agent to sell your property, then just give me a shout. Send me a message or email, tom@pinkstreet.co.uk. It doesn't matter if you're out of area either. If you are out of my area, which is Portsmouth and Fareham and Gosport and surrounding, if you are out of that area, then I will link you with a recommended estate agent. I pay a lot of money to be part of a group of premium estate agents and letting agents. So if you want me to connect you up, then I will. Anyway, again, I've digressed. So letting agents as well, if your exit strategy is to rent this property to a tenant or let this property to a tenant, then your letting agent is probably going to charge you between 500 quid and 1,000 quid to find you a tenant. Now, again, don't go cheap. And this is my bread and butter, by the way, ladies and gents. This is probably the most worrying part as a landlord. If you're going to become a landlord, the most worrying part is finding the right tenant that's going to pay the rent and not smash your property up, right? That's, I guess, the same for everyone. So if you want my letting agent to find you the right tenant, let me know. All you'll do is set up a discovery call with me. I'll find out about your situation, your property, your preferences, and I'll let you know if I think we can help you or not. I'll be honest with you about that. If I don't think we can help you with your property, then I'll just let you know. But you might just want my letting agent to advertise the property and you can do the rest yourself. That's fine. If you want my guys to do everything for you so that you can be an anonymous landlord, well, hey, then that's fine. And by the way, do you like the T-shirt? I just got this printed. If you want one, let me know. I was putting myself out there. Just send me a message through Facebook or email me if you want my agents, my letting agent or my estate agents to help you out. But don't go cheap. Whoever you decide, whether that's another company or my company, doesn't matter. Don't go cheap. I promise you, you'll pay twice. Right, tax. God, I've digressed so much. tax. Now, this is the bit that nobody calculates, right? First of all, capital gains tax. Now, that can be up to 28% of the gain, meaning the profit you made minus any deductions like fees or costs or refurbishment costs or anything like that, can be up to 28%. Now, it can be less, because you start talking to an accountant, they'll tell you what you can offset against that and what you can incorporate into it. But you have to declare it 30, you have to pay it, sorry, 30 days from the sale or from 30 days from the gain. And remember to deduct the costs and keep all of the receipts and all the invoices of everything that you've incurred throughout that property process, and let the accountant work out whether you can deduct it or not. Now, you can also get relief from capital gains tax if it's a business asset. I know. So if it is a business asset, you will still pay 20% of the profits as corporation tax. So, but that's on your whole company. So again, you can start offsetting certain taxes against other deductions and other profits and so on. But if you pay yourself from that company asset, then that's going to be a 20% dividend as well, a 20% payment or tax payment on the dividend. So, but definitely speak to an accountant that specializes in property. I can connect you again if you need it. I'll connect you up with my one if you want. But also, if you're going to rent the property out, then there's income tax. Because again, if you're going to rent this out as a private individual, then income tax will be due. And depending on what level of income tax you're currently paying or what level of income you currently have, then that will determine what the income tax you will pay will be. That makes sense. Yes, it does. Perfect sense, of course. But by the way, of course, you know, if you won't pay the income tax on that if it's in a company name, but then as soon as you pay yourself, then you'll start paying income tax and so on. Now, remember that you don't get all of the profits. I think that's what I'm trying to get to here. When you calculate your property investment and you see that you're going to buy a place for 100 grand and you're going to spend 10 grand and it's going to be worth 150 grand when it's done, that's not it. You're not going to make 40 grand. You've got to deduct fees from that, charges, tax, everything. Ongoing stuff. Then you've got to have contingencies, which is what I'm going to get onto now. Contingencies, again, are where I see so many property investors fail, because they don't account for the things that they don't know are going to go wrong. That sounds really silly, but you don't know what you don't know until you know that you don't want it, right? No, you don't know what you don't know until you know that you don't know it. That's what I'm trying to say. So with a contingency, you, I guess, forecast for things that might go wrong in each stage of the property purchase, property refurbishment, flip, resale, relet process, right? And I'll give you a few hints, if you like. So first of all, contingency for your refurbishment. Now, I always allow 10% on top of the refurbishment quote for things that might go wrong. And I'll give you a couple of examples. When a refurbishment, when you're having a refurbishment and they're pulling the wallpaper off the walls, then sometimes that wallpaper is going to pull off the plaster. So then you might leave yourself with some areas of the walls where that needs replastering that you didn't realize before. So I always allow 10% on top of that. There are also other things. When you pull up the carpet, you might see damaged floorboards. You might see, you know, a bit of damp might come about. Whatever it may be, add 10% to your refurbishment calculation and allow that for contingencies. Now, if nothing goes wrong, then that would just be a lovely bonus and you'll get to the end of your project and you'll think, hey, nothing went wrong. But you might have a leak. You might get rotten floorboards. Anything unexpected needs to have a contingency in place. I would also allow, if you're going to resell the property, I would allow 3 months for the property to be on the market and then 3 months to complete the resale. Now, those figures are the averages in the UK. I'm not just making them up. The average time on the market is 81 days and the average completion from sale agreed to completion is 91 days. Well, that was some figures that I saw last year. Might be different now, but it's going to be about that same figure. So I always allow 3 months for the property to be on the market for sale and 3 months for that sale agreed to be completed. Not saying that's how long yours is going to take, but we're talking contingencies here. We're preparing. So In this instance, if you allow for that much and it takes less time, then that's a bonus as well. If you're going to rent your property out, and thank you very much for the likes, and someone's pressing the like buttons there and it literally just pops up all over my screen. It's really good. Keep that coming. It looks awesome. Thank you. Anyway, yes, so I'm not saying yours is going to take that long, but you just have to account for it. If you're going to rent the property out, then you need to allow 1 month for it to be on the market and then 1 month again for the tenant to move in. It might be longer, but at the moment, the rental market is moving rapidly. So you can certainly be sure there's a lot of demand. And there's a number of reasons for that. There's a number of reasons like mortgage accessibility, property prices, income situations, everything like that, credit scoring, where people might not be able to buy, so they're renting, and there's a high demand for rent at the moment. So look, your property might be on the market for 1 month, and then it gets let agreed, and then another month for the tenant to move in. As long as you account for those things, that'll be great. It might be less. Your tenant might be able to move straight in. That's a bonus. You also need to allow the utility costs, the mortgage payments, for the empty property. So again, if you're reselling it, like we said earlier on, you've got 2 months for the refurbishment, or 2 or 3 months actually, for the refurbishment to be completed. Then 3 months is on the market, and then 3 months it takes to get that property completed. So you're talking like 8 or 9 months there that you'll need to just account for property mortgage payments, utility bills, anything like that. Now, once, if you're letting the property, by the way, then allow 10% of the rent for maintenance, repairs, and compliance. And I'm talking about things like, general maintenance of the property, of internal and external, and also things like your gas safety certificate, your EICR, your EPCs, anything that you must do compliantly or for repairs or maintenance, allow 10% of the rent to cover that. Now, again, you might get to the end of a year and you've saved up a load of money in your rent, in your maintenance pot, and you haven't used it. That's a bonus, but you are being a smart investor and you are allowing for that contingency to be in place. Also allow 10% for management as well. It might be a bit more, might be a bit less, but generally speaking, if you allow 10% for management of your lettings property, then that is great. If you do it all yourself, you're a DIY landlord, self-managing landlord, it is still your time, your effort, your own resource that's required to manage that property. Now, again, if you just allow that in your calculations and you don't end up spending it, then it's a bonus. Nice one. But by the way, if you are a DIY landlord, a self-managing landlord, then I would allow that contingency I've just mentioned there, 10% for rent, maintenance, and compliance, 10% of the rent for maintenance and compliance, and 10% for management, because, and I hate saying this, but you are more likely to get it wrong and you are more likely to need bailing out. I'm not saying you actually will, but you're just more likely. The chances are higher for a self-managing landlord to get it wrong. And that's when you start coming into things like fines and penalties. And it includes DIY landlords that do jobs themselves. And try and take care of compliance themselves, try and take care of all the legislation and tenant complaints, and try and do all the processes that you have to do as a landlord, trying to do it all yourself. Now, if you are a DIY landlord that's getting that spot on every single time, then great. And thanks, by the way, for all the people that are pressing the like buttons here. It's just flashing all over my screen. I love it. It's fantastic. Really motivated, really motivational. But yeah, so you are unfortunately, Mr. and Mrs. DIY landlord, a bit more likely to get those five things wrong. So you're more likely to need to spend more money. Actually, you might be saving a bit of money on a managing agent, but you're spending more money on risk of penalties and fines and charges and complaints and legislation and compliance and processes and so blah, 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 blah. Yeah, you'll probably end up spending a lot more money is what I guess I'm saying. So, last thing I want to talk through is the cash flow element. And I've mentioned this briefly as we've gone through here, but remember, you don't need all of that cash up front. You don't need all of the cash for the refurb on day one of you making an offer. You don't need to get to that stage, Mr. and Mrs. Property Investor, where you think, right, okay, so I've got my 25% deposit, I've got my stamp duty, I've got my tax, I've got my refurbishment money, I've got my this, I've got my that, I've got everything I need, now I can buy a property. I would say to you, if you know the money is on its way to you, but you've got your basics you need to get started, and you know your deposit's going to be there on completion, and you know you're going to have the cash for the refurb when the property is yours, go for it now. Just go for it. Because in this country at the moment, I probably shouldn't be saying this, but we're in this country at the moment, we don't have any regulation against putting offers in on properties. And I hate to say this, it's a terrible thing to say, but I'm just thinking as a property investor now, that if I make an offer on this property and I'm 99% sure I'm going to have the cash at the time of completion, then go for it. And then at completion, if maybe, I need another week to get the money, the seller's not going to pull out if you need another week or two to get the money. So it's okay. As long as you know you're going to get that money, then that's when you need the cash. So manage your cash flow, because it does another things. You could use that purchase, or sorry, you could use the purchase process to save up a few extra £1,000 towards the refurbishment, or towards the deposit, or towards your tax. And you can then spread that refurbishment cost across 2 or 3 months, because you don't need all of it now, or you don't need all of it on day one. And remember, you don't pay those exit fees like the resale or the letting fees until much later down the line. So you don't need that money either. And the way I do this, actually, I was talking to Tony about this, and hello, Tony, if you watch this. I was talking to Tony about this in that I've got this monstrosity of a spreadsheet which tells me my true yield. It tells me when I should sell a property, when I should rent it, when I should keep it, what values are accumulating to be. But also when I'm buying a property, I stick it in my cash flow forecaster. And again, it's a big old document. I love a spreadsheet. And it's a cash flow forecaster which tells me exactly when I need which cash at what time, how much of that cash is going to come straight back to me, how much is going to come back to me over time, what yield I'm getting on all of that cash. Because remember, we're investors, right? Which means that you are also going to have to make a return on investment for your tax. You've got to make a return on investment for the deposit that you put down, a return on investment for the refurbishment that you're spending money on. We're investors. Every single pound that goes out has to bring in at least £1.20 back. I'm just getting a phone call here. Let me just decline. Sorry, whoever that is. Don't recognize the number. I'm on a live. But look, so remember, you've got to make a return on investment. You've got to make that return on investment on every single thing that you do. It doesn't matter about property. Even if you go and buy, I don't know, a PlayStation, then make sure you're buying the PlayStation at a price that is less than what it's worth. So your asset outweighs your cost. Simple as that. Anyway, so just remember, oh, by the way, I should probably mention as well, if you do need a rental property managed or a tenant found, a good tenant found, just send me a message. I'm a landlord myself, and I think this is the bit that we need to get right as landlords. We need to... It's the toughest part, isn't it? Finding the right landlord, the right tenant that you know is going to pay the rent, look after the property. And I think it's the most important part of being a landlord, getting the right tenant. So I've actually got a guide, by the way, on finding the right tenant. And I'm also doing, I mentioned earlier on, I'm doing a training program. I'm limiting it to 50 people. So I'm sorry if you try and sign up for it and can't get on. But just send me an email, tom@pinkstreet.co.uk, or message me through Facebook. But this is going to be a guide on finding the right tenants for anybody that does it themselves. If you're a DIY landlord, you need to join that course. It's free. I'm just doing it so that to try and help people out. But like I say, if you're going to be a customer of mine, then awesome. Then we'll do all of this together. If you're not going to be a customer of mine, I just want to make sure you're getting it right. And by the way, my estate agent can sell a property as well for you if that's your exit strategy, or I can find you a property investment yourself. I own a property broker, and at the moment I'm loving a flip to let. They are the best things to buy right now. You can buy them cheap, you can do a little refurbishment on them, and then you can rent them out. And they're cracking, really good little investments. I can connect you up with a mortgage broker, I can connect you up with a solicitor or an accountant, anything you need help with. Please just ask me. But mainly, look, my main core, if you like, is property lettings and lettings management, property sales and property brokering. I'm offered lots of really good flip to lets and buy to lets and all of those types of really good property investments. They're the ones I'm liking at the moment, the ones that are, for landlords that are looking or investors that are looking to rent properties out. So if you're interested in that, give me a shout. That's the only sales pitch I'm going to give you. But for now, hopefully you have a better understanding of when you need the cash, when you're going to have to pay for things, what you have to pay for, and how to calculate what exactly your return on investment is going to be. And that hopefully is one more thing, isn't it? One more thing. And remember, if you're going to be the best version of yourself at one thing, and right now we're talking about costs and calculations, then do be the best version of yourself at everything. And my name's Tom Soane, and as always, this is the Anonymous Landlord. Thank you for joining me, and I hope you enjoyed this podcast. But before you go to the next episode, I really want to hear from you. Just search Tom Soane on any social media or just email me, tom@pinkstreet.co.uk. I'd love to know your thoughts on this episode. And if you need any help with your own situation, just get in touch. I'll answer every email and every message, I promise. Anyway, see you in the next podcast, and remember, being a landlord is hard. Being an anonymous landlord is easy. Invest, enjoy, repeat, and grow.